Yo, what's going on, everybody? Alan Kenny, managing editor, crystalballrod.com, the Blogging Network's national college football blog. And this week, we've been previewing the ACC. I figured who better to bring on than Chip Patterson from Ion College Football, CBSSports.com. He also hosts the podcast over there. Give us an idea of what's going down the ACC after a pretty eventful offseason. So go ahead and welcome him on. Chip, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing much, you know, was able to survive this recent cells of storms that seem to be hitting all over the country on this afternoon, but feeling good and happy to be back, on a Blogwin Network podcast. It's been a while for me, so I'm excited.
Awesome, man. Well, yeah, I've been meaning to get you on for a long time. This seems like the perfect time. We'll talk a little ACC. So, you know, obviously we had, guys like, Gordon Gee when, it came out this week. You know, it sounded like obviously they had the ACC kind of in their sights. And I was wondering, you know, I mean, it sounds though like the ACC has pretty much avoided the raid. I mean, with the grant of rights, you know, I mean, do you get the impression that the conference is kind of settled and stable?
The conference is settled and stable now and will continue to be able to provide that feeling to the rest of the members. Because the scariest thing about an ACC raid is that it's either going to come from the Big 12 or it's going to come from the Big 10. And either way, they're going to be coming for a valuable school, whether that's a school in a valuable market like Georgia Tech holding down the Atlanta market, or even like what they were able to get with Maryland, which is, of course, the Mid-Atlantic. I think that your Big 12 threats were coming for Florida State and Clemson, which is arguably, well, actually, you can't even say arguably, the two best programs. And there was a time when Florida State was unhappy, and it sort of seemed that behind the scenes, a lot of people at Florida State wanted that Big 12 invitation. Big 12 sort of sat back, you know, didn't make any moves. And then with the grant of rights, and then at the same time, Big 12 and Big 10 sort of calling off the troops a little bit. You know, this, I was talking to a conference official at the ACC championship game, and that time in December, I mean, that's like when Gordon Gee was making his comments. This was a volatile time for the ACC. All of a sudden, people are wondering if Georgia Tech and Virginia and North Carolina are going to be going to the Big Ten. You know, people from Florida State are sitting around like wondering if a Big 12 invitation is going to arrive on their doorstep. And an ACC official told me it accurately. She said, "I don't know what happened, but at some point, all of these administrators turned this into a big game of Risk. And everybody was trying to buy up geography, and everybody was trying to buy up television sets." And I think that with everyone locked into this new grant of rights, the one thing that was driving realignment, which is the thought of being able to make significantly more money, has now reversed itself to, if I'm going to leave, it is going to cost me a lot of money. And so when you sort of change the tone, I think that's what's led to our stability where we're at now.
Yeah, you know, and one of the problems, you know, you had schools, of course, like Florida State kind of making noise. A lot of it seems to kind of have to do with some of these programs like Florida State and Clemson being kind of, you know, upset that they don't feel like the other schools within the conference really make the commitment, I guess, to football, you'd say. You know, there's a ton of talent in the ACC. I think that people don't realize just how many elite kind of prospects the ACC sends to the NFL, for example, every year. But, you know, again, none of these programs are really kind of putting themselves among the national elite. So I always wonder what happens in the ACC. I mean, do you think it's just a cultural thing?
It is, Alan, let me tell you, it's a cultural thing that is inspired by geography, because the ACC shares the exact same geography with the SEC. Mm-hmm. And the ACC's expansion, which was supposed to make them an official football power, happened right as the SEC's run of titles takes off. 2005 is the very first ACC championship game. Florida State wins it. Hip hop hooray. Look at us. We're going to be, you know, this is going to be real strong. Florida State takes a dip. Miami is nothing like the national power that it was in the early 2000s. And at the exact same time that Florida State and Miami take a little bit of a dip, the SEC explodes onto the scene. So there's a feeling when you're in the Southeast that when it comes to college football, you're second rate. And especially the Tobacco Road schools, the ones that do favor basketball more, you know, they have been thriving while the SEC has been dominating in football. So a program like a Clemson or Florida State, they're sitting here in the exact same state as SEC powerhouses while the league is not pumping up great football achievements because there's no football achievements to talk about. What the league is promoting is their basketball success, of which there has been plenty since they expanded the conference. But the fact that it did not line up, you know, they made the divisions. They put Florida State in the Atlantic and Miami in the Coastal. And at the time that we're expanding, Miami had those back-to-back championship game appearances. Florida State won the 99 title, and they were back in the mix again. And it just hasn't worked out that way. And the promise for an ACC fan moving forward is that you're no longer fearing the raid. And Miami, you know, if they get through this NCAA storm, Al Golden has that program moving on an upward trajectory. And Jimbo Fisher was able to deliver that ACC title. And I think that he would tell you, as he has many times, they needed to remember, they need to learn what it was like to be champions because they didn't remember it. There's nobody on the team that remembered the glory days, so the experience did not match the expectations. Now they've got an ACC title. Now they've got an Orange Bowl victory. So the story, the narrative behind it that Florida State is spinning is, you know, we weren't dropping the ball before as much as we were learning how to be champions.
That's one way to put it, I guess.
Again, that's why I was very careful to say the narrative as Florida State is spinning it.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, I'm glad you brought up Miami and Florida State. I want to start off with those two. Miami is a school that seems to be gaining a lot of kind of dark horse buzz. They bring back a ton of experience. You know, I think something like 19 or 20 starters from last season. This was an offense that could put up points by the boatload, but really couldn't stop anybody. They've also had, of course, this NCAA cloud kind of hanging over them right now. But, I mean, you know, I guess my question is, are you buying Miami? And two, more kind of nuts and bolts, why do we think the defense is going to improve?
I am buying Miami as a possible ACC title contender, but a lot of that has to do with their standing in the conference not being in the same division as Florida State and Clemson. I think that they have an offense that absolutely can lead them to, because they tied for first place in the ACC Coastal last year, but bowl ineligibility kept them from the ACC championship game. The defense, which they are returning about 10 starters from that last year's unit, one reason they gave up a lot of points is because they were very, very inexperienced. Now, your sort of traditional cookie-cutter football thinking says, well, you know, they were inexperienced last year. They're coming back. They've got to be better. If you believe that, then yeah, the defense should be better just because the redshirt freshmen are now sophomores and the sophomores are now juniors. When we were sitting in at ACC Media Days last July, nobody had any questions for Al Golden about personnel because nobody had heard of anybody on the depth chart. We now know a little bit about these guys, and we know guys like Deion Bush, and there's a couple players that can get in there and make a difference. But if there's not a significant improvement along the defensive line, where I think they struggled mightily and really sort of missed those game changers on the defensive line, they just got no help. They gave up a lot of big plays, a lot of dumb mistakes. And sometimes when you're watching it, you'd be like, oh, that was, for lack of a better term, a rookie mistake. But that doesn't mean that it will 100% be better. But if it is better, I'm not going to be shocked.
Again, folks, talking with Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, ACC blogger. Okay, let's go to their in-state rivals then, the Seminoles, Florida State. This is a program that has so much talent. I feel like Jimbo Fisher has done such a good job of kind of, God, I hate using this word, but Sabanizing Florida State in terms of, you know, kind of setting the program on a certain, you know, kind of regimented course and having a vision for where he wants things to go. But, like, you know, when I watch this team play, there's just something about them. I mean, I can't put my finger on it. I don't know if it's an issue if they don't really play with like a lot of enthusiasm, not to get all metaphysical on you or anything. But, I mean, is there some kind of issue, do you think, with Jimbo?
I'll be surprised. I would not be surprised. I'll be interested to see if what you're talking about, as far as the enthusiasm, the, and really a sense of urgency, if that changes with the overhaul on the coaching staff. They've got six new assistants, and a lot of them have deep SEC ties. And that's one of the things you'll hear from Coley Harvey and a lot of the other Florida State beat writers, is that it's a very different tone at Florida State practices. There's a lot of guys walking around, and not that yelling is good. I'm not encouraging coaches to yell at players, but they just said it was different. You know, it's a much more vocal, upbeat practice. And the players seem to really love Jeremy Pruitt, who was a defensive backs coach at Alabama last year, now defensive coordinator. He's going to be bringing not Alabama's 3-4, but sort of start to utilize the multiple ideals of Alabama's defense that we've come to know in the Nick Saban era, where you've got linebackers doing a lot more. When Stoops was at Florida State, he had four of the best defensive linemen in the country, guys like Bjorn Werner, Tank Carradine. I mean, they had rolled almost too deep with phenomenal pass rushers. And so the entire back seven just sits back. And I think what Pruitt has done, and you'll hear it from guys like Christian Jones, who's a linebacker who could have gone to the NFL last year and has come back. He likes it because it's not as bland. It's more, you know, interesting. It's more complicated. It'll lead to more linebackers getting sacks, more linebackers making plays behind the line of scrimmage. You know, that threat, like every SEC quarterback is terrified because you're looking at the line of scrimmage against Alabama and you don't know where the pressure is coming from. You know, they do a very good job of mixing it up. If it works, then Florida State doesn't take a step back despite losing a lot of starters on defense. The dirty secret, and as far as the common complaint within Florida State circles, is Jimbo Fisher and his play calling. Mm-hmm. A lot of people believe that, you know, Jimbo, for whatever reason, did not trust EJ Manuel. And because there was not trust with EJ Manuel, he didn't really get a chance to break out and do some of the things that a lot of people thought he was capable of, which include run the ball, include maybe taking a few more risks offensively. And so I think back to the NC State game when all of a sudden Florida State's offense, which according to yards per play was one of the best in the country last season, could not get a first down for an entire quarter and a half. Mm-hmm. And it was because they were playing so conservatively. They had a one touchdown lead, and then Mike Glennon ends up throwing crossing routes all day and marches the team down for a game winning touchdown. The games like that, you know, if Florida State doesn't lose to NC State in the middle of the season there, we have an entirely different look on the 2012 season. So because it happened like that, that makes Jimbo's play calling a bigger issue. We'll see what happens as there were even some changes on the offensive side of the ball and as he kind of works into the new staff. Because he says the plan is to eventually hand the play calling duties over, but it hasn't happened yet, at least I don't think.
Yeah, it has kind of a micromanaging feel to it for sure. Other big division rival there for Florida State, of course, Clemson Tigers and Dabo Swinney's team there. You know, it seems like Clemson really found itself in a whole lot of shootouts last year. I know it was Brent Venables' first year, and being an Oklahoma fan, obviously I'm very familiar with some of the stuff that Venables likes to do in his scheme. A lot of the complaints, I think, that you may have heard from players or fans would just be that Venable schemes are really complicated.
Right.
I mean, do you think that they have? Do you think that was an issue for them? I mean, last year. I mean, and do they have a kind of defense this year? Obviously, the offense is there. Do they have a kind of national title type defense this year?
I do not think they have a national title type defense, but they have a defense that's good enough, packaged with the offense, to win the ACC title. I do not think Clemson is a national title contender, but they are good enough to challenge Florida State. And for those two teams, good enough to beat the other is good enough to win the ACC.
Yeah.
The key is going to be how much of an impact some of these younger players can have. Travis Blanks is a guy who came in last season and made a big, you know, he took a huge step forward, and all of a sudden he's going to be one of the leaders of the defense this year. But you got guys like Mackenzie Alexander, a defensive back, five-star defensive back from Florida that if he is able to, you know, get himself to a position of playing and starting on Saturdays, is Clemson hasn't had five-star talent in the defensive backfield. Guys like Shaq Lawson and Ebenezer Okundiko on the defensive line. Clemson had that, you know, the long run. You had Gaines Adams and Daquan Bowers back to back. They need to have that defensive, that pass rushing defensive end. I think that the scheme isn't as much an issue as some of this strong talent that they have recruited really stepping up and owning the spotlight. As Stephon Anthony has been great, but what happened to Tony Stewart? Do you remember the five-star linebacker from 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, oh yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, and it was kind of a big coup for them to land him too.
And now, I mean, and he's third string. And, yeah. And some coaches will tell you it's because of injury problems, and other coaches might tell you because he's just not that good. And I'm looking at guys like Shaq Lawson, Okundiko, Mackenzie Alexander. If they can step in, you know, maybe it's not this year, but I think that Venables could have a strong, strong, strong unit in maybe next year or the year after if they're able to continue to recruit like that.
Yeah, I mean, that is one thing that they – I mean, Dabo keeps kind of replenishing there. It's just a matter of putting it all together, it seems like, of course, with Clemson. Another kind of, you know, one of the strongholds of the conference has been Virginia Tech, obviously, and it just feels like the Hokies continue to kind of erode slowly. Are we in kind of the final stages, the death phase, so to speak, for Frank Beamer's career there at Virginia Tech?
Well, Frank Beamer's getting old, and you know, Shane Beamer's on staff, and Bud Foster, in my mind, if he really wanted to go somewhere else or was getting antsy, he could have had a head coaching opportunity.
Oh, for sure.
And in my gut, I have no inside info on this, but my gut is we are looking down the home stretch of Frank Beamer's career. And now the challenge is for them to restart and jumpstart the offense. You know, you get rid of Mike O'Kane, but you get Scott Leffler. I mean, mm-hmm. that was a little bit of a head scratching hire, in my opinion, but he has been able to succeed as opposed to, you know, the Auburn experiment, which didn't work out. So maybe Leffler is able to work with Logan Thomas. I think the biggest concern for the Hokies this season is that they don't really have a strong running game. Mm-hmm. Logan Thomas was their top leading rusher last year with only about 500 yards on the ground. And they didn't, now they're not going to have a lot of experience at wide receiver either. It's tough because Logan Thomas came back because of the bad taste in his mouth from his poor season in 2012. But there aren't a plethora of tools around him. They're going to help him get better. If he is going to make that offense dangerous this season, he's going to have to do it on his own. And it stinks if you're a Virginia Tech fan. I mean, I'll tell you, because the defense has really held their own. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you watched the Rutgers Virginia Tech bowl game.
I tried to erase it from my memory, man.
That was like pretty much a lot of Virginia Tech football that season, where the defense really was doing a good job of putting the ball right back in the offense's hands, and Logan Thomas just was not able, you know, either because of the lack of a running game or because of his accuracy problems, which have been noted. This mm-hmm. it just hasn't worked out. And for Virginia Tech as a program, it stinks because it seems like the unraveling of the offense over the last three seasons, or maybe even you might be able to trace it further than that, mm-hmm. because Tyrod Taylor was great. But when David Wilson gone, you know, you had Ryan Williams, Darren Evans, David Wilson. When the running backs went away, you know, it's all of a sudden things have really sort of fallen apart on the offensive end. While the defense has remained strong. So in my mind, I would like to see Bud Foster take over after Beamer retires and continue that strong tradition that he has developed of having a good defense in Blacksburg. But at the same time, you know, if things don't start working out, he might have incentive to start looking around elsewhere.
Yeah, gosh, man, watching Virginia Tech play is just an ordeal, man. That offense is just, oh. Let's see here. Okay. Virginia Tech and North Carolina are squaring off. Which side, the fans, I guess, maybe, which side cares less?
Well, Virginia Tech fans care a ton. Oh, you mean Virginia?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, see, here's the thing. Virginia Tech and North Carolina are very convenient fan bases. And when things are going well, they can pull it together really, really quickly. When in 2011, I think Mike London's second year, they had an early season game against Southern Miss, and there was nobody in the stands. And it was a game I think you could leave at halftime, and nobody came back. And it looked really, really bad, and it caused a lot of people to sort of point their fingers in question, you know, to what is the state of Virginia football? Can Mike London inspire people to rally behind this program? Because he was doing well on the recruiting trail. I mean, if you know, mm-hmm. London has been doing pretty well recruiting the state of Virginia and starting to put a little bit of a dent in Virginia Tech's stronghold on the state. But the recruiting success wasn't paying off. All of a sudden, Virginia turns it around, and they end up getting in sort of a one-game playoff for the ACC title game in 2011. They played Virginia Tech in the Commonwealth Cup, last game of the season. If Virginia wins that game, they go to the ACC championship. But they lose that game. They come back this year. They stink. Mm-hmm. Got the quarterback rope-a-dope with Phillip Sims and Michael Rocco. You've got lots of people transferring. You've got some disciplinary issues. And, you know, London is a lot of heat starting to come on him. So this offseason, he makes a bunch of changes to the staff. And he brings in Tom O'Brien, old NC State coach, as associate head coach. So I think with Tom O'Brien's ties to the Virginia program, the hope is he comes in for 2 to 3 seasons and is able to basically say, all right, you know, Mike or Coach London, you know, you are clearly a good recruiter. You're clearly a passionate football coach who is, you know, can be a very good coach. There just are probably some things that O'Brien can help teach him as far as building a program. Because he was successful at Richmond, but Richmond's still not the same as the state school in Virginia having to compete in the ACC. So I think when Virginia's good, the fan bases care. Same with North Carolina. Everybody's all excited about North Carolina until all of a sudden you realize this team is not going to an ACC championship game. And then basketball season starts. Yeah. And then, you know, it's hot. You hear these ridiculous excuses from North Carolina fans. And it's a casual fan base. When Butch Davis had things kind of rolling and he had Notre Dame come in and they beat Notre Dame, and it, you know, you had the game in against LSU, which really came down to the very end. It before the NCAA scandal erupted and sort of put a bad taste in the mouths of all Carolina football fans, things were starting to get to a point like there was a group of Carolina football fans. But when with everything that the administration has done with the NCAA scandal, it's divided the fan base. And there's sort of, you know, some people are hoping to rally around Fedora, but it's going to take a couple of big winning seasons to win them back, because I think the fans were divided between people who wanted to keep Butch and people who thought Butch should have been fired earlier. Both sides of that thought it was inappropriate to do it the way that they did it just before the season.
So then per capita, maybe which side's wearing more vineyard vines before the game or to the game?
Virginia. Absolutely. Virginia is so preppy. Absolutely. Yeah. Virginia's got, you know, if possible, Virginia's got more of a sense of arrogance about their school than North Carolina. Maybe like Virginia's got a lot of Michigan to them.
Oh, but absolutely.
North,
yeah.
But North Carolina's got the side of Michigan where like Michigan expects the rest of the conference to like carry their bags. And that's kind of what North Carolina does have a little bit of that. But Virginia is a far preppier university.
Yeah, lots of apple teenies and stuff consumed before the game, from what I can tell.
A lot of dudes that are way more concerned with what button down they're wearing to the game than the actual score on the field.
Oh, without a doubt, man. So you got a couple newcomers actually coming into the ACC in Pitt and Syracuse, noted football powers.
Listen, Donovan McNabb is an ACC legend.
Yeah.
Also, Dan Marino is an ACC legend. We got Jim Brown. I mean, it's great.
I can't wait to see those highlight videos on the ACC network when once it comes around, man.
It's a YouTube channel right now. It's just a YouTube channel. We're building.
Yeah, fair enough. Which of the newcomers is going to have the better chance of kind of like early success, do you think?
I really like Paul Chryst, and before spring practice, I would have told you Pittsburgh, but with Russell Schell transferring, with no real apparent quarterback, you know, Paul Chryst did not seem to have a lot of faith in Tom Savage, the journeyman from Rutgers, mm-hmm. or Chad Vojtic, who's I think a redshirt sophomore, and he didn't really commit to either one of them. No running back, no quarterback. Still a little bit of hangover from a frustrating season last year. I'm starting to lean towards Syracuse, Oklahoma. Your boy Drew Allen,
he's
coming, and a lot of Syracuse people are excited about him. They've got enough players back on defense to sort of retain the shell of a Syracuse defense that's played pretty well. I mean, this Syracuse team. We can laugh about them, but they won a Big East title last year. You know, they're on that Cincinnati where they were like the third or fourth team. Everybody mm-hmm. remembers Louisville and Rutgers, but Syracuse has rings. They've got a trophy in their trophy case. You know, they finished 8-5 with the tied for the best record in the conference. And I'm starting to lean towards Syracuse just because I think, you know, there's too many holes to fill still for Pittsburgh. I think long-term, Paul Chryst will be able to get that back. I don't get the Pittsburgh fan base. Are there Pittsburgh fans?
You know, I don't know, man. I mean, I can't say I've ever met one, come to think of it.
I know the guys who run Pittsburgh blogs, and they do a good job.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. They're intelligent people. You know, it's a good school, right? So,
yeah, but they cannot fill the big old mustard bottle out there in Pittsburgh. And it's like the same thing that the Hurricanes have down at Miami, where those yellow seats just look even worse when they're empty. And Miami's got the orange seats. It just looks horrible on television when they go to the blimp cam and you can see more of the color than anything else. And I like Paul Chryst. I think he's a very good coach. He seems like the kind of coach. I've been to some coaching lectures, and listening to him talk, he's a very modest guy. He's a very humble guy. And in a world where we have exploded the egos of college football coaches, you know, he's out here saying, "Look, I don't think that there's any great college football coaches. There is the right combination of good coaching with great players. And my goal is to try and put my players in the best position to be great." And he's not saying this to media. This is stuff he's saying to other high school coaches. You know, he's actually talking philosophy here. And I'm sitting in the back of the room. I was sitting next to Michael Felder. We were both looking at each other like, at the end of an hour and a half, we said, "Man, I want this guy to succeed." I mean, he just seems like a great, smart football mind. And it just stinks that there've been every piece of news since we started getting into the 2013 preparation part of the season seems to have been bad. Hopefully they catches a break, but I'm giving Syracuse the edge for 2013.
Yeah, man. I'll tell you what, there was a time when I would have killed for Paul Chryst to be Oklahoma's offensive coordinator, man. I mean, those, the schemes that he was coming up with there at Wisconsin were just filthy.
Yeah. And I think it'll take some time. He's starting to get some good talent, and particularly starting to get big offensive linemen, which we know his dream is to get, you know, some more of those beer and cheese stuffed men that he used to have with the Badgers, where they can just sort of like fall forward and knock over defensive linemen. And that's, I think eventually he might be able to get that. I just don't think he has it now.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to watch there. Also up there, kind of northeast, Boston College. You know, I didn't think it'd be more. I didn't think it'd be possible for them to get more boring, but I think they did actually with that hire of Steve Adazio. I mean, you know, tell me what's going on up there in Chestnut Hill,
Alan. I'm gonna have to disagree with you here, because Boston College was in such a disarray due to the last couple years under Frank Spaziani. And Steve Adazio is that he just seems to be that guy who is refusing to acknowledge his surroundings and still has a ton of energy and so much positivity. And that is something that Boston College fans need, because they slipped from, you know, like 9 straight bowl games all the way down from like 9 wins, 8 wins, 7 wins, 6 wins. I mean, it was a slide all the way down to their 2-10 season without ever having an improvement. And if you're fans, you know, first of all, you miss a bowl. Oh my gosh, that's bad. But then you dropped again and you dropped again. Could it get any worse? Oh yeah, it's going to drop one more time. And they're really sort of hopeless right now. And at least Steve Adazio is, I mean, he's like the one kid, you know, who hasn't gotten the bad news yet. You know, he's like, he's still super excited. Like everybody has gotten pink slips and he hasn't seen his yet. And he's walking in still high-fiving people. I mean, you know, he's just like somehow a burst of positivity in the middle of a really sort of depressed, not depressed, but just fans that don't even remember what winning is like anymore. You know, they don't, it's been so long since they've had a feeling that you're moving in the right direction. At least Steve Adazio is a guy with deep Connecticut ties. He's got sort of, he is a Northeastern kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And so he can at least try to repair some of the damage that was done by Spaziani in recent years.
Yeah, when I think dominant football, I think deep Connecticut ties.
Well, I mean,
I'm just joshing.
I mean, Boston College isn't going to be winning any BCS yeah. bowl games, but Boston College can get themselves back to a place where they're annually competitive for bowls. And, you know, it sucks, but I think everybody through college football, particularly in these bigger conferences that have 14 teams, you know, it's really tough to marry expectations with reality. And the reality is every single week you have a conference game, half of the conference is going to lose.
Yeah.
And there are only so many different ways that you can add up wins in order to get to 6 or 7. And when Tom O'Brien gets fired after consistently doing 7, 8, 9 wins with bowl appearances, you know, Debbie Yao says we want a consistent top 25 program. And, you know, I sort of said, yeah, I've said this in podcasts and I said this locally here in radio, that it only 25 teams out of the 125 can make the top 25. And, you know, you imagine that your conference champions and 4 or 5 SEC schools and 2 or 3 Big 12 schools and, you know, maybe another 1 or 2 Big 10 schools are going to be in there. And you really only have about 5 to 7 spots that right now, as we look at the college football landscape, are going to be available. Mm-hmm. And to imagine that you're going to be 100% in the top 25 every year is tough. And I think that particularly for the ACC, more fan bases should be pleased with 7, 8 wins in a bowl game.
No, and that's a very fair point. I remember thinking that when Jim Delaney was talking about after they had poached Maryland and Rutgers, how he felt that, you know, they'd have field really competitive football programs really quickly. And I remember thinking, well, if they're going to do that, that means that some of your other membership right now is going to get less competitive. So somewhere along the way, I mean, it has to balance out, you know.
It is literally impossible for every team to win as much as they're expected to win. I mean, the math is just not working out, and it's getting a lot tougher. And Boston College, if they get a couple bowl wins and they get a little bit of excitement, they get, you know, 1-star recruit. I mean, Boston College with Matt Ryan was able to play for an ACC title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
2 years in a row, they played in the ACC championship game. I almost call it the Jim Grobe Wake Forest model. The Jim Grobe Wake Forest model is every year we're trying to get to a bowl game. Some years we will, some years we won't. And once a decade, in an off year for Florida State and Clemson, we might creep up and challenge for the division title.
Yeah.
And I think that is a position where a lot of programs can feel comfortable that, you know, we're consistently finishing around 500, we're getting to bowl games, and once every so often we creep up and really start to threaten somebody.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. So Chip, let's see here, kind of closing up, is there a surprise team that you see in the ACC this year?
Are you really ready to laugh?
Lay it on me, buddy.
I think, and not that they're going to be doing anything blown anyone out of the water, but I think at season's end, people will be surprised by a 6 or 7 win Maryland team.
Ooh, really?
There were so many bad breaks last year, and the injury issues went even beyond.
Yeah, they were crazy.
The quarterback. I mean, this was all over the field. They could not stay healthy. I mean, they had, I think, like a 21-man injury report at one time in the season. And it wasn't just doubtful. You know, these were people that were not playing or out for the season. Nearly a quarter of their scholarships were sitting in the infirmary. I mean, this. I think I saw a little bit. You see what Mike Locksley and defensive coordinator Brian Stewart both came in last year, and there were at least signs that things have improved. Locksley's really helped with the recruiting, and Stewart has also helped with recruiting, but he had a pretty good defense last year. The problem was they had a redshirt freshman linebacker playing quarterback.
Yeah.
So the defense could only do but so much. But they were close against NC State. They were close against North Carolina. There were enough games where I felt like they could a couple of bad breaks or a couple of healthy players, and they could have won those. And with the way their schedule shapes up, I think they definitely could finish with 6 wins. And considering how horrible things were at 2-10 and at 4-8, and sort of the laughing stock that Maryland has become under Randy Edsall throughout the college football world, a 6 or 7 wins on their way to the Big Ten would be a big thing for the program.
Yeah, I think they lost something like 4 games last year that were within a touchdown. That, you know, that a lot of times is a recipe for a turnaround the next season. So we'll see. And the, you know, like you mentioned, they definitely are recruiting better too with Locksley there. I mean, that's kind of his calling card too. So, and interesting times there in College Park, heading off to the Big Ten. So I guess we'll see how things shake out there for the Terrapins, the rest of the ACC. But Chip, you know, I've taken up way too much of your time, man. I really, really appreciate you coming on, though. I've been wanting to have you on for a while, so I'm glad we got to do this.
Yeah, man, we'll do it again.
Sounds good, buddy. All right, man, you take it easy. And you all take it easy, too. For crystalballrun.com, I'm Alan Kenny. See you.